Welcome into Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin for another week of Tar Heel Talk. And we are preparing for the Sun Bowl coming up here on Friday, as the Tar Heels are also coming off of the final non-conference game of the season, a win over Monmouth on Wednesday for the Tar Heels. The men's basketball team there, of course, so 12-2 at the conclusion of non-conference play, Ross. And we're talking about a team that went to Maui and ran through the competition out at the Maui Invitational, Wisconsin being the marquee win there. The two losses, one being at Indiana at Assembly Hall, where you didn't have a great performance overall by the Tar Heels for sure, and then that thrilling game against Kentucky out in Las Vegas. Just as a general kind of quick overview of the non-conference slate, is there anything that surprised you, or is this about where we should expect to be at the conclusion of non-conference play?
Yeah, I think given the losses, I think both those were not unexpected. You know, you would like to think that UNC could have won one of those close games. Obviously, Indiana looks like the more winnable one in hindsight, given they've struggled with some other teams and have some losses as well. But that was a tough atmosphere, and UNC played them tough when it mattered kind of late. And then Kentucky could have gone either way. But to beat teams like Oklahoma State and Wisconsin and then kind of wipe away the whole other non-conference slate was big. So 12-2 heading to ACC play. I think it's kind of where you expect UNC to be. They've been kind of up and down. You know, without Joel Berry, they've struggled on offense. But guys like Justin Jackson have improved greatly, and Kenny Meeks has shown some great signs of improvement from last year. And really, without Theo Pinson, Kenny Williams, and some of the freshmen have gotten a lot more time, which has been good to see. So
yeah,
now it's time to buckle down. And I think overall, this team is maybe a little bit better than we expected when they are playing at full force and when everything is clicking. But when things go bad, it's a little bit lesser of a team. And obviously, the importance of Jackson and Berry is huge at this point.
Yeah, I want to talk a little more about Justin Jackson a little bit later on in the program, because he certainly seems to – I mean, we heard so much about Justin Jackson coming out of high school, how a great shooter he was. In the last couple of years, he's had moments where you could see that rising to the top. I think him going through the combine process last year, getting some feedback from NBA teams, he said it was real straightforward feedback that he got that he's been able to use, and really had a good season so far. But like you said, in those games where luckily for the Tar Heels, there hasn't been a game where Justin Jackson and Joel Berry have both been healthy and both played poorly. They've had some games certainly where one or the other did, but if those two guys aren't playing at a really high level, the Tar Heels certainly could struggle this season. I want to talk a little bit about the Wednesday night game, though, against Monmouth. A blowout win, maybe a little more of a blowout than we anticipated going into that game. King Rice leading that Monmouth squad back to Chapel Hill. I say back to Chapel Hill. King Rice, of course, the former Tar Heel guard from the late 80s, early 90s, who was able to get that coaching gig there at Monmouth and has done a really nice job there. Last night, a very emotional night. And I want to play this opening clip here from his press conference, Ross, and then I want to get a little bit from you over what it was like to be in the room and realize how quickly that went from a normal press conference to a really heavy feeling in there. But here's how King Rice opened up the press conference on Wednesday night after the Tar Heels knocked off his Monmouth team.
Start off by saying thank you to Coach Williams. He treats me, treats me like I'm one of his sons. He always tries to take care of me since I was a kid. I'm the luckiest guy that in 1987, Coach Smith gave me a scholarship, and it's made me have a great, great, great life.
Now, that is not how a press conference from a losing coach typically goes, Ross. What was that like? I mean, that was, I mean, he had his head down for part of the time, you know, patting himself on the head, trying to keep some composure there, a proud guy, not a guy that wanted to really seem like let go of some of those emotions that he was certainly feeling there. What was that like?
Yeah, so usually Roy comes in first, and then they bring in the opposing coach. So first of all, it's kind of odd that he came in first. You would think, I mean, it wasn't surprising that the whole media, you know, both teams' media got to speak with him because of his UNC history. But yeah, it's kind of awkward. He came in, was quiet for 5-10 seconds as he collected his thoughts, then kind of just, you know, thanked Roy Williams, talked about UNC as a program, you know, how he, you know, got recruited by Roy and how playing for Dean Smith and North Carolina has really changed his life now as a very successful college coach. It was really cool. You know, it kind of reminded me of Shamon Williams last year.
Right.
I don't know if many of y'all remember that, but Shamon was an assistant at Tulane, and UNC hosted Tulane during the non-conference schedule in 2005. And it was the same thing. He came into the media room and was really emotional, cried, talking about what UNC meant to him, what the Tar Heel program meant to him, and the Carolina family. It's kind of special to feel, to watch and to feel those emotions coming from these guys, and you kind of see how much Carolina basketball and the Dean Smith, Roy Williams connection means to these guys. And he was so thankful for Roy. Obviously, they have a huge connection. And also, he talked about him coming in 2005 and working with the team with Tyler Hansbrough, Bobby Frazier, that and David Noel, and kind of getting his start back into coaching back then. And that's when I think the Roy Williams, King Rice connection really started back.
It took another step up, it sounded like, there. Talking after Monmouth lost to North Carolina on Wednesday night, and again, Ross, a bit of an odd circumstance there. And there were some times where during the game, I mean, coming right out of being down 9 at the half, had 3 technicals, I believe it was, right, you know, on a roll from each other to start off the second half to really put some distance between the Tar Heels and Monmouth, and Carolina never looked back after that. And then King was also pretty emotional and boisterous in the post-game handshake as well, with Roy Williams pointing and gesturing at something. Did we get any kind of insight into what was going on? Was it the Carolina did get 100 points last night on some late shots, late field goal, late free throws, I should say, from Candler Coker? Any kind of insight on what was going on there?
Yeah, I actually didn't see that, but I had a buddy text me about that after the game, about what was going on with the handshake client. I'm assuming it was something to do with them kind of getting up to 100 and trying to score more once the game was already decided. But I'm not sure. But if you listen to his quotes, I mean, that's kind of what a lot of the guys who really support Roy Williams will say, like how lucky and thankful the Carolina fan base should be with Roy Williams in charge. Mm-hmm. And he said it perfectly. You know, he means so much to this program. He loves UNC. And people who want, you know, Williams to step down or get so mad at him after he doesn't call timeouts, or angry after the Duke game at home last year.
Right.
Need to read those quotes. I wrote an article today. Just read those quotes and kind of let it soak in, you know, how meaningful Roy Williams is. And he's won 2 titles. He's won so many games at Carolina, you know, and there have been some down moments and poor recruiting classes and struggles recently. But
I mean, everything that we hear from those guys, though, certainly talks about him being the Hall of Fame coach and all this kind of stuff, but it goes well beyond that.
Yeah, you can tell. As a man, it's a guy they love. It's a guy who just embraces and loves the Carolina program. I think it's really special. So those are some awesome words.
Yeah.
I would recommend you all go back and watch the video or read some articles about King Rice and what he said on Wednesday night.
Yeah, you can go over to Carolina Blue and read Ross's article about that. Ross, of course, Carolina Blue, 24/7 Sports, CBS Sports. And right now we are rolling on with Tar Heel Talk here on WCHL. I'm Blake Hodge. We have got a lot more to get into, talking a little more about that Justin Jackson, Joel Berry, how important they are. Also going to talk a little bit about the Sun Bowl and do a little bit of a recap here as we're closing down 2016. Take a look back at what overall was a really, really successful year overall for the North Carolina athletics program. All that whenever we come back on Tar Heel Talk on WCHL. Welcome back, Tar Heel Talk, WCHL. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin, recapping that Wednesday night game against Monmouth. We didn't talk about the game a whole lot there, Ross. It was a blowout, especially there in the second half, as the Tar Heels really put some distance between them and Monmouth. Talking a lot more, of course, about King Rice and the very emotional press conference after that game. But whenever you look at the game last night, Justin Jackson, another big game for him. Over the last five games, he's averaging 21.5 points a game overall in the season, 17.5 for the junior. Another junior and a guy that really is driving the offense from that point guard spot, Joel Berry, averaging 14.5 points a game so far. Those two guys have had really, really good seasons, and we knew that they were going to have to if Carolina was going to even get close to where they were last year. And now the discussion is, are the Tar Heels better than they were last year with, you know, even after losing Marcus and Bryce? But it is so dependent on those two guys, and it's become a little more clear as the season has gone on. Joel missing a couple of games with that ankle injury. Justin Jackson really playing well so far this season. I think he is a guy that Carolina fans had a lot of expectations for him from right from the get-go, coming in his freshman year, the McDonald's All-American, and he and Joel Berry, Berry, the, I think, two-time, maybe three-time Gatorade Player of the Year in Florida. Justin Jackson, a guy that you always heard could just shoot the lights out in practice and coming out of high school, but it didn't always translate. And Justin went through the NBA Combine process last year, has been pretty straightforward about getting some blunt criticism from some NBA teams, specifically from teams like the Warriors, that he feels like he would be a good fit on, places like that. So what have you seen from last year to this year? We knew what Joel could do, I think, but seeing Justin come into his own there, what does that do for the Tar Heels?
Yeah, I mean, just to start off, obviously his three-point shooting is incredibly better than last year. Right now he's shooting 40.7% from three. I think last year it was somewhere around like 29 or 27.
29.
It wasn't great. Considering how much Roy Williams talked about him being a great shooter, and you saw splashes of that last year when he would knock down a couple of shots, but he's been just money, you know, shooting over 50% from three in a lot of games, you know, knocking down numerous amounts, you know, six threes, seven threes, you know, having to get four against Kentucky, and just scoring in a variety of ways. And this is why, you know, college is 4 years. A lot of people can't come in as a freshman and really be dominant like some are. You need 2-3 years to get comfortable in the system, and then you can show what you can do. And that's what's happening with Justin Jackson. You know, he's scoring a variety of ways. His size allows him to shoot over people on the perimeter, and his size and quickness and versatility allows him to score in the mid-range and down low. And in that four-guard, kind of four-wing lineup, he's been very, very talented and very good. And he's becoming, I think, UNC's best player on offense, but maybe not the most important player, and that goes to Joel Berry. And both those guys are shooting over 40% from three, and that duo, the junior duo there, is becoming critical for UNC's success this year. And Justin Jackson's kind of just being an offensive consistent force. I think we've seen those moments last year of him scoring, or the year before, scoring, you know, 20 points a game, but now you're seeing consistent, you know, 21 points, 27 points, 34 points, 28 points. And then that's huge for UNC, and they're going to need him to bring that consistency for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, this the non-conference schedule's done now, going to get cranked up with the ACC play against Georgia Tech starting on Saturday. But, you know, you were talking about that, having those two guys be over 40% from three. Kenny Williams is right on 40%, 16 of 40 on the season. Luke Mays at 40% as well, but on just 10 attempts there. Justin, I think, has always been a guy that could weave his way into some spots on the court that other guys maybe weren't comfortable from, some of those mid-range shots. But Adrian Atkinson on Twitter, I saw, you know, he's very into analytics and the advanced metrics there, said from this small ball lineup where Justin Jackson is playing the four, he's only played there 79 minutes so far this season, but he's averaging 33 points per 40 minutes of play over that. So, you know, 40 minutes being a game, if he were to play the entire game, 33 points per 40 minutes is an unbelievable figure. And last night, while the UNC Monmouth game was going on, there was another really high scoring game. Pitt beat Marshall 112-106 in that game. And the Marshall coach is D'Antoni, Dan D'Antoni. He's the brother of Mike D'Antoni, who, you know, coached the Phoenix Suns, now coaches, or I believe in Houston, doing a lot of this very free-flowing basketball. And the quote going through here, he was asked a question last night, Dan D'Antoni, was, you guys take a lot of threes. Did you feel there maybe wasn't quite enough working the ball into the paint early on? And here's just going to read through this. You're old school, aren't you? Do you watch the NBA ever? You see those top three teams, Golden State, do they work it in? My brother in Houston, the biggest turnaround in the league, do they work it in? You can go get any computer and run what the best shots are, and it will tell you the post-up is the worst shot in basketball. If you want to run down and try to get in there to shoot over somebody, then you're beating analytics. The best shot in basketball is the corner three. The next best shot in basketball is any other three. The guy even tries to jump in with another question. He says, I haven't finished my damn analytics story yet.
Yeah, I think this is just a good basketball conversation. You look at what the Warriors do with the amount of threes they shoot. You look at teams like Duke, who often runs a four-guard lineup because they have so many good, talented shooting guards and smaller forward players. And you see Carolina having a lot of success with this four-guard lineup. Just the free-flowing mobility, from these analytics, how better a shot a three is than an inside shot, which I didn't even know. But, yeah, but Roy Williams always is like those big post players. You look at his championship teams. Sean May, Tyler Hansbrough, you know, the 2012 team with John Henson and Tyler Zeller. He likes those big, dominant post players. He loves controlling the rebounding inside, having a defensive presence inside, and also drawing fouls and getting the other team in foul trouble. Those have kind of been his, you know, building blocks for really successful teams. And now he's had to adapt a little bit with when he has, you know, some smaller players who are maybe more talented than some of his big men.
Right.
And looking ahead to next year with Meeks and Hicks leaving.
Yeah.
And potentially getting in, having some very young, fresh, and big men. He's going to have to go small if Theo Pinson stays and Joel Berry and Justin Jackson stays. So, you know, he's never going to move away from liking that big man, two big men lineup. But he has adapted, which is good to see, I think, from a coach who is old school and is pretty stubborn in his ways. But obviously the success he's had with a four-guard lineup has been huge and is important to note from a fan base standpoint.
And moving forward, I think what you mentioned there at the end, you know, you said if Justin and Joel come back, even, you know, if they end up specifically, Justin decides to test the NBA waters there. I mean, that would be a really difficult lineup to be able to produce a couple of big men that are worthy of keeping the Tar Heels at that really high level of play. So I think it's something that they're definitely going to have to revert back to more often going forward in terms of spreading it out a little bit more. But you got guys also, you're seeing it matriculate through the recruiting classes as well. There are a lot fewer just go down, post up, and score guys. You know, Kevin Knox was there last night, I believe, from, you know, following you on Twitter and everything else. So he may be the last guy there really going after hard in this upcoming recruiting class. He's 6'8", 6'9", but he's not a post guy. You know, it's just changing basketball.
Yeah, I think it's just the evolution of the game. People face up more, and if you're 6'8", 6'9", and can handle the ball, you probably have better chances of being a pro player if you are more of a guard than a big man. That classic inside post player is becoming obsolete because of how the game has become. And I think it's a more exciting form of basketball when you have, you know, more free-flowing, faster-paced transition-type players than that kind of slow-down, bring-it-inside-type game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a big man who's really good is still going to have success no matter what level you play at. So it's really interesting to follow how basketball changes. And it happens in all sports, just the evolution of the game. And it does cycle in and out, the ebbs and flows of basketball.
Because on the flip side of that, you know, Carolina – again this year, which is always an emphasis of Roy Williams, is one of the best rebounding teams in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's,
you know,
huge.
That helps to be able to have a couple of big guys down there. And I forget who the coach was, but says, you know, it makes it pretty confident as a shooter to just throw the ball up there sometimes, because, you know, it's about a 50-50 chance one of those Tar Heels is going to come down with an offensive rebound. So there's two sides to the coin always there. So be interesting to see how a recruiting class can impact Roy Williams' style of play going forward, I think, next year.
Yeah, and I think when you look at this team, they're going to be good if Jackson and Berry continue their performances. I think they can compete with any ACC team, but they won't be able to do much in terms of postseason play if Hicks and Meeks aren't very consistent. I think Meeks, you know, had another good game last night. Hicks had a pretty good game.
Right.
They're kind of getting the flow now of being consistent offensive forces. I don't think either of them are going to be what Bryce Johnson was last year, but combined, if they can both score around 12 to 16 points a game, that's what UNC needs, as long as Jackson and Barry are scoring in the 20s.
Bradley is right there at 9 points a game as well.
Exactly. So. Yeah, I think Meeks and Hicks are finally kind of getting to where they need to be. And if that's maintained, then UNC has a great chance to make a lot of noise come March. But if they are quiet, you know, Hicks had some 2-point, 4-point games, it's going to be tough for UNC to compete at a national level in March. So that's interesting to follow. Just I think Hicks has it. You want to see him do so well. He's such a great guy. He's so athletic. You think, man, this guy has so much physical talent, and he's just not putting it all together. But, you know, the last couple of games, he's had some pretty good outings.
And he got the little mini dreads.
Yeah, that's weird. He had a haircut. His mom said he just wanted to switch it up. So
Mix
he has
the
mini dreads.
Bit.
So it's an interesting new look for young Isaiah.
You can go look at Avery Trindle's Twitter feed, the WCHL reporter. He had a pretty good straight on shot there of those mini dreads there for Isaiah. So mix it up a little bit. Try something new. Maybe we can get Ross to try that whenever we come back here. On Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Welcome back into Tar Heel Talk. We've been looking at Tar Heel basketball, of course, as non-conference play is in the books. 12-2 for the Tar Heels in non-conference play. Now, full on into Atlantic Coast Conference action. Georgia Tech on Saturday, and then it'll be at Clemson. So both of those games on the road to start off the ACC slate. Big first home conference game will be the Saturday after that, January the 7th, when the Tar Heels will welcome in NC State, who seem to be kind of turning up their level of play, Ross, as well, because they've finally getting everybody on that squad. The European guy that I can't say his name, the 7-footer.
Seven.
You're sure that one. He is back from his little ineligibility phase there with the NCAA. Dennis Smith Jr. had he had a pretty good dunk last night. You can find that one all over the interwebs there. But it'll be exciting to get that game coming up. But two ACC games before that. So we need everybody on the Tar Heels to keep up that level of play, specifically Justin and Joel. And then if you get Theo back, it was nice to see Theo appear that he was eligible to play basketball last night. He didn't have his glasses on with the jersey. Doesn't seem like he's really close, but maybe a little closer.
Yeah, I mean, Roy was asked that last night, and he said that Theo is only doing like skeleton offense, dummy offense, and really isn't moving much in terms of real game action. So he's probably a couple more weeks away, because once you even can get moving like you would in a basketball game, you still have to get in shape and
game
like that.
Shape. So
it doesn't
right.
look like he's that close to full pace. So
he's going through the layup line.
Could be a month, could be, you know, 3-4 weeks till he gets there.
So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But it will be the final game of the season, final game of a lot of Tar Heel careers on Friday with the Sun Bowl out in El Paso. Tar Heels taking on Stanford. This is a big game, Ross. I mean, there's not a whole lot of other way for that I can think of how to put that. I mean, this team going into the season expected to be good. It looked like they were going to be really good with the way Mitch Trubisky was playing at the beginning of the year. And then you just blow a couple of games down the stretch against Duke, against State, really let down performances. Larry Fedora said they underachieved those last few games, but there's a chance here to put that behind you and send these seniors off with a really good win against a good Stanford team, even without Christian McCaffrey. But the Tar Heels will be without Elijah Hood as well.
Yeah, I mean, the whole year there had been a couple goals. You know, obviously it was to win the state, to make it back to the ACC championship game, to win the ACC championship game, and then to win their last game was kind of the new goal. And this
right.
is the last game against Stanford in the Sun Bowl. You know, maybe not the season that all UNC fans and the UNC program expected, but it's a good game against a great opponent. And a win like this is huge for momentum into the spring, gives the fan base a positive note. It's a big win for Fedora. You look at what Stanford's done the last couple of years. And just these seniors, a great group of guys. I think there's about 16 seniors who've been with this program for 4 years. They've been there for like kind of the darker years, the first 2 years. And then really been the game-changing, culture-changing guys. You talk about Ryan Switzer, Matt Collins, Bug Howard, the linemen who don't get much attention, yeah. Lucas Crowley, Caleb
John
Peterson,
Heck.
John Heck,
yeah.
TJ Logan, you know, Des Lawrence, who's been a huge defensive leader. And then, of course, Nas Jones, who's going early to the draft. He's a four-year guy.
Redshirt junior, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
And Mitch Trubisky, likely his last game, another four-year guy.
That's just a lot of talent. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those things like Roy said last year, not only losing two of your eight, but mm-hmm. your best two.
I mean
that's a lot.
It's a complete rebuild on offense. You look at the offensive line, Logan, Switzer, the whole wide receiver core, and Trubisky. I mean, you're going to see a whole different offense next year.
And we are assuming that Mitch leaves.
I mean,
so,
you have to.
I think that's a smart assumption, but
yeah.
We are still just assuming that for now. One guy that has said he's coming back is Elijah Hood.
Yeah, so Elijah Hood was announced he's going to have to sit out the bowl game because of some injury issues.
And we still don't know what that is.
And that could be why he was held out of the second quarter in numerous games late in the season. Obviously, some medical concerns there. Doesn't seem like something that's holding him out of entire games, but maybe something he just needs to get better. Don't want to risk injury. But yeah, he's back, you know, and that's huge. You know, have a guy who's been all ACC performer his sophomore season, and that adds a lot of continuity. And for maybe an offense that won't be as good passing the ball
right.
with three new starting wide receivers, obviously likely a new quarterback, to have a big-time 6-foot, 225-pound back who can run over people and get you those tough yards is big. So great to see Elijah come back, a great kid. Obviously academics very important to him, and a really good guy and a good a person for the program
yeah,
in terms
absolutely.
Of fan base and whatnot.
Yeah,
so.
Really good representative,
yeah,
ambassador for the team.
For.
Yeah, there you go. But it is, I think, really interesting because we looked at that position in particular of saying, you know, there are a lot of talented wide receivers that seem to be, you know, in the wings for the Tar Heels, but there were honestly just not going to be any running backs on the
yeah.
squad next year if Elijah didn't come back. Now, Elijah saying he'll be back has certainly got to propel them with a little bit more confidence. And I think Zamir White, who is way down the road as a recruit, has now announced that he's got a date that he is going to announce his college decision. And I'm curious what you think about this in terms of program stuff that you were just starting to talk about. Carolina fans right now are able to point to a quarterback, which, you know, for whatever it is, quarterbacks are going to be your most high-profile. They can point to one right now and say he is very likely going to be the top quarterback taken in the draft. What do you think that does for Larry Fedora recruiting and even having a guy like Elijah Hood that are just elevating the status of the program with specifically those in-state guys like Zamir White?
Yeah, I think having a guy drafted like Trubisky very early, which you would think if he comes out he's going to be a top, you know, 15 pick or whatever, is huge. You can point to that when you're recruiting quarterbacks and recruiting offensive players. You can say, hey, look at what this guy did at Carolina. Look at his success now. We have an offense that if you're talented enough, you're going to be able to put up huge yards that's going to get recognized. And then, you know, obviously if they have success in the NFL, they become a huge, you know, you can point to him and
yeah.
say he's a Tar Heel. He went to Carolina. He played in our offense. And then a guy like Elijah Hood, a big, powerful back who's gotten chances to succeed in this offense, is big for getting guys like Zamir White. He's the number one running back in the 2018 class. He's a top five recruit overall. He's from down the road in Scotland County, which has usually been a recruiting school for UNC.
Mm-hmm.
He's at UNC all the time. I mean, he is a stud in that class. And for UNC to take that next step in building their program, being a national competitor every year, they're going to have to land these in-state guys. And it
yeah.
hasn't happened that much recently. Dexter Lawrence obviously
right.
went to Clemson. He's having an awesome year. He's been on a lot of All-American lists.
Yeah,
and
ACC
all freshman
Defensive
lists.
Freshman of the Year there
yeah.
down in
I mean,
Clemson. Elijah is one of those guys, though. Elijah
yeah.
was committed to Notre Dame. He was ready to go to Notre Dame, it certainly looked like, and then flipped really late in the process. So, you know, being able for him to hand that off, I think it'll be equally as interesting thinking about that Stanford game. Christian McCaffrey's out. We all know that. We talked about that last week. Bryce Love is your backup running back for Stanford, and he's a Wake Forest guy from the Triangle there over in Wake Forest. So it's that, you know, that proverbial fence that every coach talks about. There's been a lot of talent coming out of North Carolina recently,
mm-hmm.
and being able to keep that in state for the Tar Heels is certainly got to be step one in terms of building that program that Larry Fedora keeps preaching that he's building in terms of culture and everything else.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, teams like Clemson and Tennessee and Georgia and even some of the other SEC schools have been, you know, coming in and taking that talent away, and that's really where they have to stop. Clemson particularly usually gets, if they want a player out of North Carolina, they usually get him, especially out of the Charlotte area. So I would follow this Zamir White kid. His nickname is Zeus. You know, he's had a nickname of a Greek god since he's been a freshman in high school, and he's unbelievable. He's big. He's just like Hood, but I think a little quicker, a little shiftier, and has better breakaway speed. And he's unbelievable. So, I mean, if UNC lands him, it'll be the biggest recruit in Fedora's tenure at UNC. And he's really a game-changing player. I want to see how UNC's offensive line looks next year. That would be huge for his decision-making in terms of, you know, are they going to have players who can open up holes for me? And, but, yeah, again.
And that's an interesting point, because going into this season, you thought it was going to be a lot of shifting along the offensive line, because you had four seniors, I think, and a redshirt junior that were going to be part of the offensive line there. And the injuries obviously played some type of factor in this year's team, but it also got some experience for some of those young guys going forward. So you don't have quite as much turnover there. You get Elijah coming back. Larry Fedora has already started talking about Rontavius Groves, who they've redshirted this year, and that they seem really excited about. Mm-hmm. You got Austin Prohl coming back and Jackson and some of those guys. But this game against Stanford, it's on CBS and all those kinds of things. It's not a huge slate of games during that whole day. So you're going to be able to really focus in on that game. The Tar Heels have a national stage here to say, we didn't have a great ending to the regular season, but this is still a big game.
And I think what adds even more intrigue to that, like you said, a national game, is the fact that Mitch Trubisky is playing. And you're going to have a lot of NFL fans, NFL writers watching him, see how he performs, a lot of other potential NFL prospects on both teams, Nazir Jones, Des Lawrence, other players be watching. But Trubisky, I mean, that stud quarterback, top five pick, is going to bring so much attention to UNC's program, and that starts against Stanford, because he's kind of an unknown name, first year starting. You see all these articles like, the best kept secret, you know, all nobody knows who this guy is, because he only played, 12 games so far. So that's pretty cool. It's a great platform for UNC football. Hopefully they don't blow it like they did last year against Baylor, which was kind of an embarrassment.
No, that was terrible.
You know, I think it's going to be a shootout. Defense has to make stops. And as much as you want to see McCaffrey play, for the love of college football, it's got to be kind of nice that he's not playing.
And you'll be able to hear it right here on WCHL. Maybe you have to work or something, so you'll have to
listen to it
on the radio. Jones will always provide you a great call. We're going to get started super early in the morning. We're going to go right at 11 o'clock. With our countdown to kickoff, and then we'll hand it off to the network. It's not that early. Do want to run through a little bit of the rest of the ACC regarding bowl games so far. Boston College taking it to Maryland. Good job knocking out the Big Ten there. Maryland Terrapins 36-30. State just went and whooped up on Vanderbilt. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but they finished their season 7-6, 41-17. Final score there with State over Vanderbilt. Wake Forest also getting a big win. Of course, they've been in the news so much for Wakey Leaks over the last few days to weeks now. Beat Temple, the American Athletic Conference champion, 34-26. Miami taking it to West Virginia as well, 31-14 down at the Russell Athletic Bowl. Pittsburgh, so far the only ACC school to lose, and they were without James Conner for a lot of that game after he took a blow to the head. 31-24 Northwestern with the victory. So the remaining slate, Virginia Tech, Arkansas, that's on Thursday. UNC Stanford, that of course on Friday. And then Michigan against Florida State. LSU against Louisville. Georgia Tech and Kentucky, which I imagine not many people will care about, and then Ohio State and Clemson. So still some high-profile games where the ACC can continue to really have an impressive bowl season. Right now, we are going to hit our last break of the program, be back with a little more of a year-end review for you, as it has been a really good year for UNC Athletics on every kind of field and pitch you can imagine. We'll recap all that just a little bit and then send you on your way to 2017 whenever we get back on Tar Heel Talk. Welcome back to Tar Heel Talk. This is the final one of 2017. Ross, this has been fun, man. I don't know if they're going to keep letting us do it in 2017. I assume that they'll let us keep taking over the airwaves here for an hour on Thursdays. Yeah. But we've had a good time in 2016 so far. There's been a lot of good stuff to talk about. Of course, we didn't get started with this until right before this football season started off. But going back a little bit further than that, the spring was a really good time to be a Tar Heel fan or covering UNC. I mean, the Tar Heel basketball team, which was a bunch that the fan base really fell in love with because of Marcus Paige, Bryce Johnson, all those guys. Going to the national championship game, Marcus hitting that double clutch three, and then Chris Jenkins just ruining all of it at the three at the buzzer there. That was still, I think, a certainly more successful season than people expected the Tar Heel basketball team to have last year.
Yeah, it was an incredible run, particularly, you know, dominating in the last stretch of the game, getting that win against Duke at Duke, I think was huge for those seniors. They'd only won one time
against
the Blue Devils. And that run through the tournament was awesome, and I was there for every game. It was an awesome experience for me covering that. And just to see those guys make it to the final game and come, you know, 4.7 seconds short, was tough, but obviously something to always remember and a great run. And the lacrosse teams both won national championships, which was awesome. And the football team had a great year. I guess last season, 2015, was really cool seeing them win the ACC Coastal Championship and then play Clemson and Charlotte for the ACC title was cool too. And you kind of seen the development of the Larry Fedora, the Tar Heels. And that's kind of been kind of our theme here on the show is football and UNC football and the program under Larry Fedora. So that's been really interesting to follow since I've been covering the team and obviously doing this radio show as well.
But, I mean, field hockey was in the national championship game. You had both the men's and women's soccer team getting to the Final Four of their NCAA tournaments, the NCAA volleyball or the UNC volleyball team get to the Sweet 16. I think it was a really unbelievable year as a whole. There were, of course, a couple of dark spots with some junk, as Roy Williams would call it.
New NOA is out.
New NOA, and that was after the previous NOA that also came this year, I believe it was. So there was certainly not all Carolina blue skies there, but it was a fun time to be covering UNC, and it doesn't look like it's slowing down anytime soon as we've got a big conference slate ready to get cranked up for basketball. 2017, what are you looking for, if anything in particular, from 2017, whether it be from the basketball team or from football going forward next year, that you'll say this is a good benchmark for the Tar Heels?
Yeah, I think you want to see how good this current basketball team is going to be. You know, we're 14 games in, and I think they can be really good when they're clicking on all cylinders. Last year's team, you know, played at a high level consistently through the ACC and through the NCAA tournament. So you're really interested to see if Justin Jackson, Joel Berry can keep it going, if the big men can step it up. You know, you look at the basketball recruiting. Obviously, Kevin Knox is a big name you want to follow next season. And then in terms of football, closing out the recruiting class in 2017. That happens the first Wednesday in February. That's going to be really interesting to follow as well. So obviously with all these sanctions, all the NCAA stuff and all the junk, it's really crazy how good Carolina has been in football and basketball, considering the cloud, the recruiting issues, and just the national tension, the negative national tension on the team. So, you know, it's amazing how good they have been in both sports despite all these issues. And that's kind of, I think, the theme in the last couple of years.
And that's you know, that's one, bringing it full circle, I think that's one of the reasons King Rice kind of was breaking down last night, of people not, you know, realizing that Roy Williams was guiding a basketball team through recruiting classes that ultimately, you know, was an unbelievable shot away from winning the national championship. During this same thing, Larry Fedora has not only taken over a new job as the UNC football coach, he's also led them to an ACC Coastal Division championship under all of this.
Yeah, and I think I didn't mention this when we were talking about King Rice earlier in the show, but you know, he's a guy you could look at for taking over the program when Roy leaves. I mean, you think about who else is out there that has that Carolina family on his name, and King Rice seems to be the most successful head coach out there. So that's definitely a name to throw out.
You're going to hear Jeff Lebo's name in that same conversation. If you're going to talk about, you know, in the family, in the family guys, his name's always going to come up as well.
I think there's a good chance that Bubba looks outside the family whenever that happens. But
Hubert Davis on the bench right now as well. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully if King gets his way, that won't happen for 20 more years.
That's right.
You said right. So I think Roy and maybe Wanda would have something to say about that. But
and then to tease next week's episode, we're gonna have Steven Schramm on from the Fayetteville News Observer. He's a big ACC writer, covers UNC, Duke, and State. So in preview of the UNC State game next Saturday, January 7th, we're going to have one of the most experienced ACC writers in studio talking hoops for about 40 minutes.
Should be a really good time. Right now, we're going to send you off and hope everybody has a fantastic ending to 2016 and a very happy 2017 to you from all of us here at WCHL. He's Ross Martin. I'm Blake Hodge. This is Tar Heel Talk.